April 14th, 2024. The right to breathe, severe air pollution, the unseen culprit, the nation, Thailand. Reason given for the cause of smoke? Sugarcane. March 6th, 2024. Thailand, 10 million sought treatment for pollution-related illnesses in 2023, BBC. Reason given for the cause of smog? Sugarcane and rice burning. March 30th, 2023. Thailand's extreme air pollution, also BBC, blames sugarcane and rice burning. January 15th, 2024. Is Thailand's Clean Air Act enough to end pollution? DW Network. Reason given for cause of smog, sugarcane burning in northern Thailand and corn burning in Burma and Laos. March 8th, 2023. Chiang Mai to hand out face masks as dust from fires hits hazardous levels. The Guardian blames crop burning in general with no mention of corn. March 27th, 2023. Air pollution chokes Thailand as campaigners call for stricter laws. The Guardian again blames sugarcane this time. 20th of March 2024. Thailand mulls ban on corn imports from neighbors to tackle smog. Bloomberg blames corn burning in Burma and Laos, while blames sugarcane burning in Thailand. April 5th, 2023. Smoke from forest fires blankets northern Thailand in thick pollution. CNN blames forest fires and, quote, slash and burn farming. December 7th, 2023. Filtering through efforts for cleaner air, Bangkok Post solely blames sugarcane farming. April 6th, 2023. The connection between burning season in Thailand and poverty, the Borgen Project, blames slash and burn farming and sugarcane. Okay, so something is maybe a little odd here, no? All of these news outlets can't seem to get their stories straight. I swear to you all as well, I have not selectively curated these. These are the first news outlets that just came up in a Google search. There's another article here that I'm going to read from. While those other pieces are from major Western outlets, here's a regional one by a Thai reporter funded by a Scandinavian NGO. And this is the most in-depth article I could find on specifically sugarcane burning. Headline: Burning Dilemma. Sugarcane Farmers in Thailand's Green Vision in Southeast Asia Globe by Wanpen Pajai. Produced as part of the Stockholm Environment Institute Asia Media Grant for Environmental Reporting. To quote from it here then. A sugarcane field is burnt to wilt away the tops and leaves, leaving only the charred sugarcane stalk for ease of cutting and transportation to factories. But as the sugar production starts churning and the fields are burned from December to February each year, the air quality worsens significantly as Northern Thailand enters its annual burning season. Okay, it frames the issue as sugarcane burning being responsible for the smoke in northern Thailand. Let's go on here. Gan, this is quoting again, Gan, a sugarcane harvester in northeast Thailand's Udon Thani province near the Laos border, is just one of many farmers that still uses this burning method during harvesting season. So it's a little odd, given that Udon Thani is not in the northern region. It's in the Isan, northeastern region. And this may seem an odd quibble, but if you know anything about Thailand and its geography, Isan, the northeast that is, and the north are completely different. They just have a kind of similar name. It's a bit confusing because the shape of the country is weird. They are completely distinct, both geographically and agriculturally. The northeast, Isan, that is, and Udon Thani in particular, are known for their endless flat horizons of agricultural land, while the north is defined by steep forested mountains. Udon Thani is around 500 kilometers away from the nearest northern province. That's five provinces away. Not to mention that annual smog does not affect the northeast provinces like Udon Thani as it does the provinces in the actual north. I just checked, and in the past month, Udon Thani has 4 days where the PPM, the AQI, was over 150. Comparatively, in Chiang Rai, the past month, there have been 20 days over 150 and 5 days over 200. So here we're clearly talking apples and oranges. Udon Thani and the north, the northeast and the north, are not the same thing, and neither are the effects of the smoke there. I can see the confusion for foreigners reading this with north and northeast, but there is not a single Thai person who would consider Udon Thani to be part of the north, and evidently it's not part of the annual smog, other than in the confines of this article. So in short, this particular sugarcane field in Udon Thani is not in northern Thailand. In fact, if we search the rest of the article for the word north, it only comes up with northeastern. Strange, given that this article specifically identifies and frames the problem as northern Thailand's burning season at the outset. Actually, overall, the article is quite good for understanding how sugarcane production works. It's just very bizarre that this initial framing is highly misleading. So, sugarcane. Honestly, while researching this, I started to feel extremely gaslighted because, as I said in the last episode, I've never once seen sugarcane growing in the north in all my years. But I keep being told over and over again by these respected outlets and environmental NGOs that sugarcane fires in the north cause the annual smoke. So first I asked friends who live around here. No, they've never seen sugarcane in the north. Then I asked farmers that I know, and no, they've never seen sugarcane in the north. And still, after reading all these articles, I still felt like maybe I was missing something. Each article confidently stating the presence and burning of sugarcane in the north. So I actually asked the Northern Peasants Federation of Thailand. I said, "Do you know anyone growing sugarcane in the north?" They said, and I'll quote the exact message, "Thang nua bu khao pho chao, mai mi oi." In the north, there are cornfields, no sugarcane. And here's a message from a farmer friend in Phang District in northern Chiang Mai. He said, quote, "In Chiang Mai, we never grow sugarcane. Everyone knows the smoke is from corn burning, which also causes forest fires." So what's going on here? Well, like I said, it's a goddamn corn conspiracy. Hello again. The AQI right now where I am is at 150, which kind of sucks. So of course I'm inside hiding from the smog, talking to you good people. So I was wondering, and when I was just rereading that bit of the script I wrote, I was wondering, like, have you ever watched Law and Order SVU? So there's like this kind of classic type of episode where there'll be a sex crime and the detectives find the first suspect who's like a real sleazy guy. He seems totally guilty, blah, blah, blah. And then on closer inspection, he's actually innocent of the initial crime. And they end up, however, charging him for some other unrelated offense before going on to get the real perpetrator. So when I was thinking about sugarcane, And corn is exactly like that. Sugarcane is the first suspect who is still totally guilty, but not of this particular crime of northern smoke. And look, I don't have any personal bias against corn and a love for sugarcane. If sugarcane was guilty, I'd be fine at calling it out. You know, what do I care? But it just isn't true. Sugarcane farming is one of those kind of industries that's on like the naughty list of bad crops, like palm oil. It fucks up ecosystems. It's almost always harvested with hyper-exploited labor, and it's often burnt, causing smoke pollution. Actually, from what I can tell from my research, sugarcane does in fact, or maybe, emit more pollution than any other crop in Thailand. You see? Sugarcane. Dung. Dung dung. Guilty. But it's not grown in the north. And there is no evidence at all that the smoke from sugarcane migrates somehow to the north. In fact, if you look at the sugarcane growing regions, they actually have far better air quality than the north, particularly during smog season. To give an indication of where sugarcane is grown, the major sugarcane mills in Thailand are in Suphanburi, Singburi, Chaiapum, Konkan, Kalasin, Loei, and Amnat Cheruen. All of these provinces are in either Isan or the central regions. The closest mill to the north, sugarcane mill to the north, is that one in Loei province. But obviously, any actual farmer or agricultural worker, or myself even, knows sugarcane is not grown in the north. Sugarcane burning is a very real problem, and throughout the year potentially accounts for more agricultural emissions than corn. But that burning is far more spread out, both geographically and spread out through the year, meaning the smoke doesn't have that ubiquitous blanketing effect that corn does in the north. The sugarcane industry in Thailand is run almost exclusively by Mithapon Group, which is the world's fifth largest sugarcane producer and the largest producer in Asia, including China. The head of the company, Isarat Vong Kursul Sun Kit, I think, is ranked as the 24th richest man in Thailand. Sugarcane is big, big agribusiness, the kind we were talking about in the last episode. Mithapon, however, do not have any investments in corn, and we will get to who does a little later. For now, though, let's just bask for a moment in the uneasiness and maybe a little smugness that the BBC, CNN, The Guardian, Bloomberg, and Associates have got this completely fucking wrong. Since we've already started busting myths today, let's just knock out a quick one here, shall we? Another one, that is. So there were two more culprits in those articles on my hit list. And the first is rice field burning. I'd say about half of those articles blamed paddy burning alongside sugarcane. This one is a lot easier to dispel. Rice exports have always been the bedrock of the Thai agricultural economy. By looking at exports, we can get a clear sense of how much rice is grown and how much growing is increasing or decreasing. So, this is from the Thai Rice Exporters Association. In 2002, Thailand exported 7 million metric tons of rice. In 2022, Thailand exported 7.6 million metric tons of rice. Well, that was easy, wasn't it? Rice production has remained almost stagnant in the past two decades. And we talked about this last episode, that there is no, or has been no movements really to expand paddy lands, as one, there's not enough suitable land, and two, the market is already saturated and at capacity. I will concede that farmers do burn rice fields, everyone's seen it happen, but to the actual argument that rice paddy burning causes the annual smoke, well, the smoke is a phenomenon we've seen appear in the past 20 years. That would require some major change in rice production to account for this output. In short, nothing has changed with rice production in the past 20 years. So there's no way that rice burning can be the cause of this phenomenon that started and intensified in the past 20 years. Again, I said it in the last episode, but you know what has started and intensified in the past 20 years? Well, again, between 2002 and 2022, corn planting for animal feed increased from 620,000 rye to 2.4 million rye, an increase of around 400%. Next up, slash and burn, which was mentioned numerous times in those articles. This one is more of a pedantic issue I have, because what the writers think they are talking about when they say slash and burn is in fact not slash and burn. What they mean is burning the stubble. The reason I bring this up is because I'm quite a big fan of slash and burn farming, though of course not of that awful racist name they gave it. I went into this in the last series, and I think I did quite a good job explaining it, so I'm just going to edit in what I said last time because it makes my life a lot easier. So, cue it here. And to preface this, I think it's important to point out the practice of slash and burn is something of a grey spectrum. That is to say, some groups practice this method more intensely and in different formats to others, to the point that it became almost impossible to clearly distinguish what I'm even talking about at some points. So I will follow my Virgil guide for this series in Ann Usher and use the example she did using the Dangjia method. I don't know how it's pronounced. I think it's a Karen word. Dangjia. I'm going to go for that. So the so-called Dangjia method, practiced in Eastern Burma and Western Thailand, typically among the Karen people, involved rotational shifting cultivation, controlled burning of forests, and fallowing periods for fields. More specifically, this is a mixture of small-scale natural farming techniques, where fields are created by controlled fires in forested areas. The fire, rather than ruining the land, as the colonialists always saw it, helped to fertilize the soil. Crops would then be planted and rotated over various seasons. So one season, let's say you plant corn, and another season beans, and so on. You know, you rotate it. And after a few seasons, you fallow the field, meaning you just leave it alone without tilling the soil, so as to recover that organic matter. Another technique during this fallow period is to plant cover crops like clover to refill the nitrogen levels in the soil, which will increase the soil recovery rate compared to just leaving it alone. Furthermore, the surrounding forest acted as an essential source of food and materials via hunting and gathering. Anyway, that was easy. So in short, the Dangjia method, or Sweden cultivation, or natural farming, or as the colonialists of the last century called it, slash and burn, and apparently still do call it, is actually pretty cool and pretty good. So I think what the writers in those articles that we saw at the beginning were referring to there is actually not slash and burn, but burning the stubble, or maybe they just completely conflate the two, I'm not sure. The reason I have such an issue about them using this kind of language, as I said before, is because using slash and burn as a term specifically targets indigenous shifting cultivators who, rather than destroying the environment and the forest, actually seem to have been the only ones who can ever live harmoniously with it in the past few centuries. So when these ignorant writers use the word slash and burn, those shifting cultivators catch strays. And God, I hate this kind of lazy, useless journalism. I think like slash and burn, like they just think, oh, they cut it and they burn it. And so that's what they kind of assume when they see burning crops. No. Anyway, sugarcane, busted. Rice, busted. Slash and burn, busted. And the next big one, cross-border smoke. Now, this is the most common argument to actually have some truth to it, cross-border smoke. It's also the one that you'll often find the most in Thai media, Thai language media. It goes something along the lines of saying that corn growing in Burma and Laos is what's responsible for smoke, which crosses into Thailand. Usually they can see that there is some corn growing in Thailand, but they wildly downplay the Thai role in the smoke and massively exaggerate that of Burma and Laos. I'll quote here from a piece called The Tangled Problem of Sugarcane. God, we can't escape it. And this is from Think Global Health. Anyway, this article talks mostly about sugarcane, of course, in the same old misinformed framing way that all the others do. But then there is this section on corn titled Cutting Corners in Corn. So I'll quote here. In maize production too, contract farmers frequently circumvent government bans on agricultural burning to meet production targets set by private agribusiness. This constitutes a form of slow violence as it jeopardizes the health of contract farmers while reinforcing unequal power relations to their long-term detriment as a short-term strategy to avoid indebtedness. That is absolutely true. Well done. Smallholder farmers with limited access to agricultural lands have also become increasingly indebted to large agribusiness since 2012. Due to falling global commodity prices, combined with fluctuating yields and reduced government subsidies. Also true. Well done, you're doing so well. Consequently, they are under continual pressure to produce high-yielding crops to repay debts instead of investing in sustainable technologies and mechanized methods of clearing land that do not rely on the use of fire. Also true. At the transnational scale, Thailand's northern and northeastern provinces, in particular, suffer from the impacts of transboundary haze from agricultural burning in neighboring countries. Especially the burning of maize. A Bangkok-based environmental science professor estimated that the majority of maize burning hotspots are, quote, located outside of Thailand, about 70%. They are all in our neighboring countries. Sus. Sus quote right there. We'll bust it later. Anyway, going on. All maize-producing countries in mainland Southeast Asia, including Thailand, have sought to accelerate national production in recent years to meet growing regional demand, especially from China, which uses maize to feed livestock for meat consumption. Thai agribusiness conglomerates that profit from this boom in maize exports have been protected from liability by successive Thai governments. For example, maize became the main cash crop in Myanmar due to industrial maize contract farming schemes promoted by Cheruan Pokapan CP, Thailand's largest private company, to supply China's chicken feed market. So we finally get three paragraphs on corn. And not bad paragraphs overall, I suppose. However, again, in the rest of the article, the framing is completely off. And it throws away the point to the whole section. And again, this is a very small section from a much, much larger piece on sugarcane, which also fails to point out that there isn't sugarcane farming in the north. But anyway, at least they're aware of corn, right? However, this article, and according to one unnamed Bangkok-based professor, 70% of burning spots come from outside of Thailand. Poor old Thailand, just a victim of its ghastly neighbours yet again. Well, for starters, I followed up on the hyperlinks and the citations and I couldn't find out who that professor was, and we'll get into the susness of the academy a little later. But I find that 70% number wildly dubious. To bust this myth, I'm going to rely heavily on visual data and I will put some links to the pictures in the descriptions to this episode. But absolutely yes, there is also maize growing and burning in neighboring countries. but that 70% number does not stack up at all. And for this, we need to talk about what that professor said, hotspots. So Greenpeace published a study last year in this topic where they looked at satellite imagery of cropped maize land in the region. This report, by the way, doesn't mention sugarcane, so good for them on that. And this is the only piece of decent reporting on maize I've actually come across. Their conclusion also squarely points a finger at northern Thailand, although it does highlight vast cropped corn lands and hotspots in the surrounding provinces. Not provinces, like other countries, border region. Now this term burning hotspots is an interesting one. We see it a lot in the Greenpeace report, and they describe hotspots as such, quote, "In this study, satellite images using moderate resolution imaging spectroradiometers equipment from NASA's Terra and Aqua satellite and VIAS system satellite have detected hotspots, burn scars in maize farming areas located in the Mekong subregion, which also includes Upper Northern Thailand, Lao People's Democratic Republic, and the Shan states of Myanmar. The images reveal a correlation between the increase in industrial maize plantation and transboundary haze pollution, a grave threat to local communities." Unfortunately, they give us no further information on the methodology of how a hotspot is identified and defined, and this is what I have a problem with. So hotspots are the hot term in Thai media for blaming the smoke on Laos and Burma, like in that earlier quote, the 70% quote. Greenpeace had not as dramatic but similar findings wherein they identified the majority of hotspots coming from outside of Thailand as well. Now, when it comes to satellite analysis, I am obviously a bit less qualified and I find it a little harder to dispute, but I am nonetheless skeptical that there is a direct correlation between supposed hotspots as they identify it and smoke levels. For starters, let's actually look at the smoke levels in these high hotspot regions. Monitoring stations in Shan State in Burma, southern Yunnan around Jinghong in China, and in Laos around Luang Prabang all consistently register equal or lower parts per million smoke numbers than northern Thai stations throughout the smoke season, yet they have significantly more hotspots. You get it, right? Like the actual intensity of the smoke in the surrounding regions is far less than in Thailand, but supposedly they have far, far more hotspots. You can go and look for yourself on AQI Air. The air quality index is not significantly lower, but the fact that the number is lower is significant compared to the number of hotspots that surround it. You know what I mean? I'll post pics, okay? I'll do a little folder or something. Okay. So for example, right now on the live hotspot map, northern Laos is absolutely covered in hotspots. I can barely even see Laos, while northern Thailand has very, very, very few. Yet at the time of writing, Chiang Mai and Lampang and Chiang Rai in Thailand have higher AQI readings, so more smoke, than Luang Prabang, which is surrounded by hotspots. And generally throughout the season, Chiang Mai, for example, and Luang Prabang keep an equal pace with one another in terms of actual smoke intensity, despite Luang Prabang being surrounded by these supposed hotspots. In fact, looking at the live hotspot map, they actually look like they're confined by the Laos border. What it looks like is that there is not really a clear correlation between hotspot levels and smoke levels on a localized level. And again, this data would have us believe that the smoke is somehow sucked into northern Thailand. And hey, maybe there is a weather phenomenon where that's possible. But if there is, there isn't a single mention of it anywhere. Remember what I said on the last episode? Where there's fire, there's smoke. Well, there doesn't seem to be all that much smoke coming from these supposed fires. In short, I think there's an error in correlating or perhaps identifying hotspots and smoke on the part of the satellite scientists. I mean, there clearly is, right? Because it says, oh, there's all these hotspots, there's all these fires here, but the smoke levels are very low. Whereas where there's no hotspots, the smoke levels are very high. Something's wrong. Like, it's not just me being shitty at science, right? And I have a few theories. And one is that these hotspots are often described as, quote, potential burning sites, which is interesting. So I guess that means, like, it's where the conditions are ripe for burning, but it doesn't necessarily mean they do burn, maybe. And I've also seen hotspots simply listed as fires. So fires that you can detect from a satellite in space, right? And if this is the case, I have another theory, which is that slash and burn farming, and what I really mean here is Swidden agriculture, the good kind. And that, so Swidden is definitely practiced to a higher degree in those areas of Lao and Burma in Shan State, is practiced much more highly there than in Thailand. So what the satellites could be observing are numerous well-controlled Swidden fires, which, as we discussed before, are pretty much harmless and actually beneficial for forest life when practiced correctly. This then could account for the lack of intense smog pollution on these localized regions, where hotspot numbers are very high, but smoke levels are relatively moderate. While we're here, and we're talking about intensity of farming in these different regions, it's important to look at the amount of land and labor dedicated to farming in the three regions. Accurate information on farmed land in this cross-border area is hard to find. However, we can make some assessments based on the population sizes of these rural areas. In the Northern Thai region, where corn is grown, and here I'm including the provinces of Kang Phang Phet, Phetchabun, Loi, and Dak, so the extended northern region, the population is around 9.3 million. The neighboring corn-growing regions of Burma, so Shan State, Kayin State, and some of Kachin, have a population of just around 3 million, though much of that farmed land is really quite far away from the Thai border. In the same regions of Lao, there's around 1 million in the border provinces, and in China, only around 1.5 million, as the highland becomes exceedingly non-arable further north of Sipsong Panha, or Sichuan Panha, or however it's pronounced. So just in terms of labor power, the population of northern Thailand is around double than all the other regions combined. The huge drop-off in population density suggests they don't have anywhere near the necessary labor force to carry out as large of an agricultural operation as they do in Thailand. These other three regions are also far less agriculturally developed, and as I keep saying, the smoke only significantly developed in this region around 20 years ago, which was, as we saw in the last episode, the outcome of a complex confluence of economic and political contexts almost unique to Thailand. Furthermore, corn exports in this surrounding region actually almost solely go into Thailand. And so according to the same report from Greenpeace, quote, Thailand's food manufacturing and livestock market consists of big businesses led by Cheruan Popkan Group, CP, that is, Bettergrow, Saha Farm, Cargill and Thai Food Group, and Lem Thong Pochana. All of the listed businesses contribute to the connected supply chains in agricultural fields, from plant production to food processing. Consequentially, these business groups wield power over the economy, just as the government has power over maize pricing. Aside from dominating the market share, all of these companies mentioned own a combined 90% of chicken meat production. It is almost certain that almost all of the chicken, meat, and eggs available in the Thai market comes from this industry, unless the consumer directly purchases it from independent small farmers. A major portion of the market belongs to Cheruan Popkan Group, CP. Even though they hold only 30% of the domestic market, the CP Group is the largest feed manufacturer in the world, according to a report by Market Research. Around 42% of the company's revenue in 2017 was generated from animal feed sales. Going on here, stricter maize purchasing policy is one of the factors influencing big business to invest in neighboring countries to compensate for the loss of production in Thailand. The expansion of production areas to neighboring countries is another tactic used by the livestock industry to meet the demand for meat and animal feed in the global market. A report by Oxfam reveals information regarding the CP Group and its investments in the Shan state of Myanmar under the name Myanmar CP Livestock Company Limited. In 2012, the company invested in maize and rice production, including maize processing, costing around $550 million. Around 80% of the production rate goes to exporting. That's back to Thailand. So, I hope you got that right. Basically, all of the maize coming from across the border goes, or 80% apparently goes into Thailand for Thai companies. So in short, there is cross-border maize burning as an issue, but definitely not that 70% number, surely not that 70% number that anonymous Bangkok professor claimed. Regardless, the corn growing that takes place over the border goes back into Thailand anyway and is owned by a Thai big agribusiness. So why do I even bother pointing this out? Well, a pervasive attitude in Thailand is to blame the smoke on Burma. And that's it, or Laos maybe. They just say, it's Burma's fault, not Thailand's. And this is a very common attitude. So what I'm saying is, judging by measuring data from air quality stations, labor capacity and satellite analysis, the burning area in the Burma-Laos-China regions is largely geographically dispersed compared to northern Thailand. As such, the blanket of smoke itself is less intense in those regions. As such, I don't see how smoke from the three surrounding regions would again migrate to the north of Thailand. What this cross-border argument does, even when based on decent reporting like Greenpeace's, what it does is, when improperly framed, not enough context is given, is it abdicates the responsibility of Thailand for its own role in the pollution, a role which is the largest contributor out of all of the parties involved. Actually, there's another paper that I can't find right now, and it looked at how sentiment to cross-border pollution is affected in different countries. So pollution from neighboring countries going over the border, and it's broadly considered more egregious than domestic pollution, by the population, that is. And so the other point I'm making is that while there is corn burning going on in the surrounding region, it is still the responsibility of one particular Thai agribusiness company, and that's CP. Now, since we have arrived at CP, I should point out that they are a highly litigious company, and Thailand has some very strict anti-defamation laws. So we have to be a little careful about what we say here. So earlier I alluded to issues in the academy with reporting on smoke pollution. This is, in my opinion, and from what I can see from my research, the reason why so many journalists blame the non-existent sugarcane plantations and their burning. In short, they read sketchy reports and regurgitate them without ever talking to any local farmers. I think the real cause, or maybe not even visiting the region, to be honest, or not getting out of Chiang Mai City, where they have their nice 4- and 5-star hotels and craft beer shops. I think the real cause for this is that journalists would rather trust supposedly qualified academic reports than the word of farmers. The point is, something is telling these journalists that sugarcane and rice are to blame. Anyway, on a completely unrelated note, when I last went to Chiang Mai University's agricultural fair, there were all these tents, all these different farmers groups, different industries. Like, there's a tent with sunflowers, maybe one with orchids, and all of them are pretty small. Just like them, like these kind of like marquees, you know, with just a few people under them showing off their products. And then there's a behemoth, the CP tent. Four walls, air conditioning, TVs, a stage and catering. It's wild. Anyway, whatever, that's just a funny unrelated story about Chiang Mai University and their relationship with CP. And on another completely unrelated note, try Googling in Thai language CP and the major agricultural universities in Thailand, like Kasset Sat and Mejow, etc. You'll find yourself inundated with scholarship opportunities, paid partnerships, research grants, and so on. This isn't just CP, but all of the major agribusinesses operating here. Anyway, that's just another unrelated little note that might be interested to those of you who may want to contextualize the relationship between agribusiness and the academic institutions that those journalists rely on for their research. Talk to farmers, people, please talk to farmers. I can put you in touch, just message. Anyway, I think the really weird thing here, which I've struggled to get my head around, is why the sugarcane industry puts up with this kind of slander. I mean, they're a huge evil agribusiness as well, and they're taking the blame for something which totally isn't their fault. And I have a little theory on that, of course. I think that the flak thrown at the sugarcane industry in the north of Thailand that doesn't exist is simply straw manning, and that is to say a creation of a kind of enemy that doesn't even exist, to distract from those really responsible. This way, the state, or the media, or whatever, can be punitive and take action against the sugarcane industry in the north as much as they like. But it doesn't affect anyone's bottom line, because, as I keep saying, there isn't a sugarcane industry here. It's just a theory, I don't really know. And while researching this, I've been talking to a friend who's a Cambridge economist, and he said something interesting, which was that often seismic events are happening just below us in the economy, and we can't see them. And that made me think of the last series, about the land clearances and the counterinsurgency policies that were taking place behind closed doors. During that time, people weren't able to see it for what it was. You can't see the forest through the trees, kind of thing. But with the benefit of hindsight, it's clear to see that conspiracy of the past few decades. And I think the corn conspiracy is perhaps something very similar. At this point, I believe that this conspiracy is very much automated. I talked about this in the last series too, and it can be hard to articulate sometimes. But I don't believe that there are necessarily elites sitting behind closed doors plotting this whole thing out. Rather, let's say, for example, somebody gets a university scholarship from a big agribusiness firm. They then go on to work at that firm, while plenty of their friends and classmates stay in the research department of the university. Their big agribusiness firm will also, you know, fund the university further, fund their research projects, and fund scholarships and what have you. And then when the university is researching pollution caused by corn, they perhaps just lean on their old friends to dim the report down a little, to make sure to blame cross-border smoke, or sugarcane, or slash and burn, and so on. And then finally, these lazy, ignorant journalists just read the report uncritically and propagate these inaccuracies further, which turns into a feedback loop. I don't think at any point that anyone has necessarily thought or said, we need to blame sugarcane over corn. Rather, it's a system weighed so heavily towards extractionist, latifundian market economics that the process of creating and maintaining this conspiracy is essentially automated. So I know I said this would be a two-parter, but there's more we need to cover. A few more myths to knock down, and I actually want to talk about farmers and the future. So I'm going to do another episode, and then we'll call it a day. So as I said, next time we'll cover some more bases. Hunting, forest fires, and we'll look at the lives of farmers and talk about what is to be done. And potentially, what is already being done. Rao Rak Per Thai. Thanks.